Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Worldview once again. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and it's great to be back. The show almost did not go on, almost, due to an acute case of pothole. No, not pothole. Post-hole fever. Post-hole. Have you ever had post-hole fever? It's an affliction one gets when one does not dig post holes very often and then digs a whole bunch of them. But we made it through. Being careful, of course, as we pursue construction, ever careful not to build more chicken run than we need. But certainly building a chicken run here at the McBurney compound, and construction is well underway. And I am thankful that the children have been trained in proper post-hole etiquette and how to assist and all that. And we'll let you know how it goes with the chickens. It certainly is a lot of fun building the facilities. So I think we've got about $400 in right now. We'll probably go in about $600, not counting the chickens. And now, how many dozen eggs until we make that money back? Now I understand why farming is such a tough business. But we will be selling eggs, hopefully by summer, at least to friends of ours. It should be fun. And that, see, I had the whole show already set up. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to open with. And then reality strikes. And I realize I've got a lot of good friends in Michigan. I'm heading out to St. Joe for a wedding this summer, as a matter of fact. And I find out that out in Kalamazoo County, six people were slaughtered on Saturday night by just a maniac for no reason. The killer, according to the Journal News out in Kalamazoo County, the killer has no known criminal history. And investigators found no links between the killer and the victims. Just went on a murder spree. Killed six people. Two people survived. Just unbelievable. If we wanted to, we could do the whole show every week. I could do a daily show just on the massacres and the slaughters and the killings going on day by day as the proctocracy rules us and insists that we, the people, must tolerate a certain level of bloodshed in our midst. And it's a bit depressing. And our prayers are with the folks in Kalamazoo County today. It's just a horrible, unbelievable story that I just found out about after church this morning. Just unbelievable. So now how am I supposed to go on with the show after all that? Well, you have to go on. We just have to accept the fact that people are going to be maniacs and they're going to go on rampages and slaughter people. And well, I guess we just have to get used. We just have to live with it, I guess. I'm getting sick of it myself. Very tired. Now, is Donald Trump going to be the solution? I mean, an awful lot of gullible evangelicals have aligned themselves with Donald Trump. And is he going to be the... I heard Glenn Beck's gone on a fast for Trump. He's on his knees for Trump. Or no, for Cruz. I'm sorry. That's the other guy the gullible evangelicals fall for. I apologize. Certainly don't want to confuse those two. Donald Trump being a complete narcissistic egomaniac, and Ted Cruz, probably a decent guy, Harvard-educated lawyer, 50 years old, doesn't yet quite understand the unalienable right to life, but he's a constitutional expert of some sorts. Anyway, so the political scene is relatively hopeless. Relatively hopeless. Is Bernie Sanders the answer? No. Hillary Clinton proves once again that the establishment is the establishment for a reason. She's been buying all those people off for the last 8 years, and she's got them lock, stock, and barrel, apparently. Unbelievable that she could win a primary, in my opinion. But there we are. So, anyway, I'm going to open where I wanted to open. Before the murder and mayhem invaded my own private Idaho here, out on the McBurney compound. We're going to start with a story from the world of sports. And we don't do sports very often. No, but we are going to open in the world of sports a story from the Bleacher Report that I pulled down this past week. The Denver Broncos, who apparently they're a pretty good team. They're shifting their focus to other options at quarterback. Now, Peyton Manning has not officially announced that he'll be retiring from the game. But apparently, according to the Bleacher Report, the relationship between Manning and general manager John Elway soured during the past season. Gee, I wonder why. Anyway, maybe it's because they're both a couple of big-time jerks. How about that? Yeah, he's a big-time jerk. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to get into some of the allegations that have been swirling around Mr. Manning in relation to a lawsuit regarding a cover-up of an incident that happened when he was in college. I'll leave that aside until we get more facts. But let's just say he wasn't a very nice guy to this particular lady over at Tennessee University, at least not in his book, if what she says is correct, and it's corroborated under oath by a number of people. Anyway, Manning's $19 million base salary becomes guaranteed March 9th, so the Broncos will have to make a decision. Elway will have to decide whether or not he moves forward with the broken-down old quarterback that got him what he wanted but still left him miserable. So Elway and Manning get what they wanted, and they end up hating each other, and it couldn't happen to a nicer couple of jerks. Fine. Get out of here with that. So Manning will no doubt retire if he has half a brain in his head. For crying out loud, he broke his neck and managed to come back and win the Super Bowl. What more do you need? So there we have our sports for the week, for the month, maybe for the quarter. Unless the Dallas Cowboys sign Tim Tebow, you probably won't hear too many sports stories on the Weekly Worldview. Now, if you've been listening to the Worldview since we first went to air, which I believe was the fall of 1999 when the first broadcast went out via the World Wide Web, before anyone even knew what a podcast was, I was doing it. I was doing one before there was an iPod. I was podcasting. I didn't even know it. Because I was too controversial to get on the terrestrial radio. And the sponsors were terrified because sometimes I say things that might offend part of their demographic or whatever. But since 1999, if you've listened to the broadcast over the years, I have been wondering, where is my flying car? Because back in 1999, let me put it this way. When I read Megatrends in seventh grade, which would have been about 1980-something-ish, I was told that by the turn of the century, we'd all be buzzing around like the Jetsons in our flying cars, or at least I inferred that. And so since the turn of the century, I've been wondering, where is my flying car? Well, the Daily Mail is reporting that Terrafugia is hoping that their prototype will be ready to fly in just 2 years. It's a concept car with fold-out wings and twin electric motors attached to each end. It's going to be powered by a 300-horsepower engine, and it will carry two passengers quite comfortably. And you can land it on the street and park it in your garage. I don't know if you can land it on any street, but you can land it in a relatively small area. Thrust, a very important element, by the way, in flight. I used to work for an electrical engineer, and every time a report of an aircraft crash came on, it would always end with, "Investigators are looking into the cause of the crash." And my double E friend would always say, "Yeah, it was either a loss of thrust or a loss of lift. I guarantee you that." And nobody really laughed because he was kind of a crotchety old guy. But thrust will be provided by a ducted fan, and the vehicle will have a cruising speed of 200 miles an hour, and we'll have a 500-mile range. And I'm interested. TerraFusia says its aim is to provide true door-to-door transportation with a vehicle capable of being parked in a home garage like an ordinary car. I suppose you'd land it at the airport, right, and drive home, which would be pretty cool. How's the TSA going to deal with that? They'll freak out. I just wanted to land. I'm going to drive home from here. Well, you got to go through security. But I already landed. The plane didn't blow up. They won't know what to do. Now, interestingly, the car, the flying car, will be semi-autonomous and use computer control so that passengers can simply type in a destination before taking off. They say that the operator will have the final say over a number of things, but you could, you know, hopefully be able to program in your destination and take a nap, right? Just wake up to land the thing. Wake up to take off and land. That would be great. Anyway, so the future's not all that bleak. We may have flying cars so that we can escape the murderous madmen on their committing their mayhem on their killing sprees as you fly, escape from Kalamazoo. You'll need a flying car. Now, let's move into the politics file. Let's see. You've heard the controversy over the FBI and Apple. Yeah, the FBI wants Apple to crack a smartphone, one of the San Bernardino killers. And according to the French press agency, some have argued that the company should do it. Others have insisted that doing so will set a dangerous precedent. will set a dangerous precedent. That was obviously a Freudian slip related to the current election. No matter what happens, we'll be worried about setting a dangerous precedent in the Oval Office. Apple's CEO, an open sex pervert, Tim Cook, refuses to crack the smartphone for the FBI. But the French press agency reports that Mr. Cook's intransigence apparently depends on geography. That's right. Apple decided in February 2015 to store local users' personal data in China for everyone who uses Apple in China. And it's considered a gesture of goodwill toward Beijing, a gesture that other companies have rejected for security reasons. This is because it makes it easier for China to request access to personal information when that data is stored in China and under their jurisdiction. Now, Apple has never yet given Beijing the means to hack an iPhone, but they have basically given everybody's personal information to China by keeping it in China, so that when the Chinese communist thugs want your information and they walk in with their AK-47s, the good folks at Apple will be able to give it to them. AFP reports that Apple's alleged behavior in China has demonstrated that the company may be capable of granting a government, even one known for internet censorship, access to users' personal information if it's within the company's best commercial interests. Yes. So it's really not a matter of principle with the pervert who runs Apple. It's really a matter of profit. And if you're following the election, apparently that's the most important thing to most people. It's really all about the money. It's not so much about principle. It's about the economy. It's about jobs. It's about economic security. I mean, you can throw the principles out the window because everybody's freaking out, worried about their money. Everybody's freaking out, worried about the terrorists. And so what happens when you get yourself in a situation like that and you're working with a generation of voters who've become completely unmoored from right and wrong, is you end up with a charlatan like Donald Trump bamboozling not only the average voter, but the gullible evangelicals. And you end up with an empty suit like, who's that kid from Cuba? Well, I guess he's not from Cuba. He's from Marco Rubio. Get an empty suit like that. And then you get a double talker like that lawyer from Texas I never heard of, that guy. And the one interesting thing, Jeb Bush did quit the campaign, finally, right? We've all been waiting. Finally, Jeb called his mom. He's like, Mom, can I just go home now? Please, I told you I didn't want to do this. Oh, Ma. One of the reasons that Jeb had to drop out was I think he was running out of money. I do believe it. Ain't that right, Cindy? Yeah. And you could just see in his face he never really wanted to do it. Anyway, so we're trying to think, how many chickens do you get? I think you got to get about a dozen chickens. Yeah. And my extremely attractive audio engineer insists she wants a walk-in chicken coop. Doesn't want to have to stoop down. You know, to so get inside. And I told her, I said, you don't have to clean things like that. She goes and she cleans the goat house as if it's, I mean, as if there are children living there. It's a strain on her back. So we're going to build a walk-in chicken coop for about a dozen chickens. Now, we don't need a dozen chickens, but I think you can't have too many chickens if you're going to get into that sort of thing. And meanwhile, we'll go back to the world of sports. Believe it or not, yes. Well, it's not really sports. It's sort of sports. Nike has dropped their pitch man, Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao is a fighter, a boxer. Not UFC, but the old school, you know, where you just use your fists and you're not allowed to hit below the belt and you can't kick people in the kidneys. And you're now, I don't know if you're restricted from having tattoos above the collarbone, but a lot fewer boxers have those than in the UFC world. That reminds me, did you hear that who was the female UFC fighter who lost the big fight? You're not Ronda something. Anyway, she thought about killing herself when
Beyonce?
No, not Beyonce. No, Beyonce didn't think about killing herself. She just got half the police in the country wanting to kill her. So she's not a fighter. The police don't want to actually kill Beyonce. They just want to strangle her. What with her black power thing at the Super Bowl? I didn't watch that. But apparently it's caused quite the stir. But, yeah, Ronda, whatever her name is, Riggles, or I don't know her name because I'm not a big UFC fan. She lost her first fight. She thought about killing herself. And I'm thinking, you really need to take a step back, you know. Maybe analyze your life and your priorities. It's not like you can't get a rematch and make like $20 million. Maybe that's what prevented her from going through with it. Anyway, back to the world of traditional old school boxing. Well, it's not old school anymore because you can't speak your mind anymore, even if you're a fighter. Manny Pacquiao was dropped by Nike because he made allegedly anti-gay comments. He was campaigning for a seat in the Philippine Senate. And over in the Philippines, people are still honest enough with one another to say, you know, that homosexuality, it's gross and it kind of creeps me out. And I'm not in favor of all that. It's disgusting. So when Manny was asked about it, well, first, before we go to Mr. Pacquiao, should we give him first billing? I suppose we should give him first billing. He was asked about open flaming homosexuals flaming down the street in Manila and all that, getting married, all that stuff. And man, he said, will you see any animals where male is to male and female is to female? The animals are better. They know how to distinguish male from female. If we approve of male on male and female on female, then man is worse than animals. Why am I doing a Puerto Rican accent for a Filipino guy? Manny Pacquiao? Well, he's Filipino. I don't know. I don't have a Filipino accent. I don't have that in my repertoire. So I've been to the Philippines. That's the first place I ever saw a live monkey outside the zoo. The bus stopped so that what do you call a pack of monkeys? A herd? A gaggle? I don't know, but a bunch of monkeys crossed the street. That was something to see. But anyway, Manny Pacquiao said this. He says, look, the animals know better. And so anyway, Nike immediately takes a hissy fit. All the queers in the boardroom at Nike start hissing and foaming at the mouth. The next day, Manny Pacquiao beat a path to the closest microphone to try to apologize, but it was too late. The homos had already hissed their disapproval. So proving that you should just never say sorry when you say things you really believe in. Just go with it. Manny Pacquiao obviously hasn't learned anything from Donald Trump. Just don't apologize for it. Big deal. You tell him, you know what? I'm going to do another campaign and Nike's going to pay for it. You just watch me. Elect me, Pacquiao should have said. But Nike, as Pacquiao was running to the nearest microphone to apologize, Nike released a statement that read in part, Nike strongly opposes discrimination of any kind and has a long history of supporting and standing up for the rights of the LGBT community. We no longer have a relationship with Manny Pacquiao. Hiss, boo, Manny. Anyway. I like Manny Pacquiao more now than ever, and I never really knew much about him, except I know he's a big draw on the pay-per-view and all that. And apparently he's a relatively conservative Filipino. What is that, conservative now? Just because you don't agree with men defiling one another and women abusing one another sexually, that makes you a conservative, I guess. My, how far we have fallen. Now, speaking of the homosexuals and the homosexualists, I've got an article here written by a homosexual reporter for The Telegraph. And he doesn't come out in the article, but he writes it. It's about misogyny in the homosexual community. And the reporter says, I first noticed it as a young man when I began to socialize in gay venues. So there's a tip right there. Probably a little light in the loafers. He says, one night a guy was holding court telling us how before he came out as gay, he had dated a woman because he wanted to become a father. And the man holding court said, the moment the silly cow announced she was pregnant, I said, well, I'm gay, and I dropped her like a sack of potatoes. And then he laughed at her, and all the homos clapped at a bar. Yeah. The reporter for The Telegraph says, I soon discovered such sentiments were commonplace in the gay scene. Gay men referred to one another pejoratively as she or her. When they're mad at each other, they call each other a bitch, and they call each other by the feminine pronoun. Women present in gay bars are known as fag hags, and they're there to keep their respective homosexual friend company until he meets another guy, at which point the hag is expected to leave. This is not me saying this, by the way. This is someone from inside the twisted, perverted world of the sex perverts who hang out at homosexual establishments. He talks about drag queens and how what drag queenism is a very crude lampoon of womanliness. And I don't know. I did not know all this, but it does not surprise me at all that homosexual men are misogynistic and they generally hate women because most of them hate their parents. And it's because horrible things happened to most homosexual men when they were in their teens. Most of them were molested in some way. And a lot of times the parents go into denial about the whole thing, and the kid ends up screwed up for life. I know it happens. I know it for a fact. Let's see, anything. Oh, one more thing from the Telegraph article. U.S. rapper Azalea Banks, she commented on the misogyny in the homosexual community. Are you familiar, my dear, with Azalea Banks? No, I think she's the daughter of Chicago Cubs great Ernie Banks. I just made that up. I have no idea who she is, but she's a rapper, which I'm assuming she's a black girl. And she talked about it. She's seen it. She says, I feel like a lot of time gay men can be way more misogynistic, even as straight men. Even how they come up to you, you know, picking on your hair and telling you you're fat, telling you all kind of stuff, telling you how to be a woman. What do you know about being a woman? Get out of here with that. Take that back home. Get on up out of here. That's Azalea Banks. I believe that was actual tape. Backstage at the Grammys, from what I understand. Our microphones were there, of course. All right, now, let's move from Azalea Banks, and we'll go to the, let's talk about, should we do the depression or the, President Obama, this past week, met with DeRay McKesson. Yeah, he met with Barry at the White House, along with a number of other notables, including, Al Sharpton, Carnell Brooks, and Representative John Lewis from Georgia. Have I mentioned to y'all that I marched with Dr. King in the Civil Rights Movement? My name is John Lewis. I walk across the bridge with Martin Luther King. Therefore, I deserve a seat in the Congress forever, even after I die. I'm not a big fan of John Lewis, or Al Sharpton, or Cornell Brooks, or Black Lives Matter. And DeRay McKesson is, he's one of the organizers for the Black Lives Matter protest movement. And the discussion apparently focused on criminal justice reform and building trust between police and neighborhoods, which means telling police they're not allowed to arrest criminals anymore. That's what that's really all about. So the president meets with, he skips the funeral of the Supreme Court Justice, Antonin Scalia. He skips that. He had an important meeting, apparently. He had a track he had to get to, from what I understand. And skipped that. But attended the Black Lives Matter meeting with DeRay McKesson and Loretta Lynch. Not to be outdone, Loretta Lynch was there, so just so that they would have a female, because otherwise it's just a bunch of misogynistic black guys talking about how much they hate their mothers and fathers, and how, yeah. So Barry meets with angry young men in Black Lives Matter, the angry young men who hate their fathers, and he encourages them in that, because Barry can relate. He can relate to that. And then he invites an aging bunch of race hustlers who hate their children and everyone else's. And they invite Loretta Lynch just, I don't know why. So they have a girl there. Wouldn't be accused of being sexist. All right, so there you have that. But apparently there's a lot of depression in the Black Lives Matter movement. Now, if you people have listened to the broadcast, you know that I do believe that not only in Black Lives Matter, but in the Occupy movement, and pretty much everyone who's donating to Bernie Sanders, they're suicidal idiot children who hate their mothers and fathers. And probably with good reason. Most of their mothers and fathers divorced and broke the kids' hearts when they were little. And they've never recovered from it, and they hate them. And so they vent their frustration and hatred and anger and confusion and stupidity by occupying and defecating on police cars, donating to Bernie Sanders, and marching in the Black Lives Matter movement. Well, one of the Black Lives Matter leaders is named Marshawn McCarroll. He committed suicide this past week. And apparently it's launched, according to the Washington Post, McCarroll's suicide is forcing a round of introspection about a reality that predates Ferguson, Missouri. Some of the most prominent activists and organizers are battling not only the system and not only the man, but also depression. In Cleveland, a lead organizer confessed on Facebook that he too had tried to take his own life. And dozens of other leaders in the Black Lives Matter movement have shared stories of their battles with depression. And so I actually sympathize with these people because I understand that when your father was never around, that you're going to have a lot of anger in your life. But there's better ways to deal with that anger, that frustration, and that hurt than becoming a socialist maniac, protester slash rioter. Okay? There's just better ways. There is a man named Jesus Christ who will be your friend. And he can heal all that hurt, and he can replace your absent father. He can be your father figure. And he's a guy who actually laid down his life for his friends. When it came down to nutcracking time, Jesus Christ was willing to take the punishment. So don't look to Al Sharpton. Don't look to Cornell Brooks or John Lewis or Black Lives Matter or Barry or Bernie Sanders or any of those. Because there is a man. There is a man who won't leave you and who can restore you. And as I said, his name is Jesus Christ. I think I like that guy's guitar better than Jimmy Page, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I like him better than Jimmy Page. That's saying something. All right. But we'll move on. No, we got to come back, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. I don't know why. Yeah, I guess I got to do it. Reason number 1,030. We're up to reason number 1,030. To get or keep your children out of the government schools. Yeah, the Washington Post reports on every parent's nightmare. Yes, you send your children to school believing they're safe, only to discover that they may have been the victim of a predator. Okay, well, only to discover that they're being taught that God doesn't exist. We don't know where we came from. We probably evolved from some kind of animal. And everything's pretty much relative and all of that. Forget the predator. What about the godlessness of the educational system? Lying to children about their origins and about the fact that there is a God. And that you're going to meet him. And that you're not him. And that everything's not relative, and he's going to make that perfectly clear to you at some point if you're under that misconception, son. But Judge Sylvania W. Woods Elementary School. All right, if you're sending your kid to an elementary school named after a judge, right there, that's a red flag. Please. It's in Prince George's County, Virginia. A volunteer at the school, who apparently loved helping children there at the public schools, has admitted to creating pornographic videos with children during school hours and on school grounds and other places. I don't want to name the guy, actually. He's 22 years old. 22 years old going after little kids. He's been charged with 10 counts of felony child pornography. He can be heard in the videos directing children ages 9 to 13 to perform for him during his perverted videos that he made. Hapless parents in Prince George's County have many, many questions. How could he have been left alone, unsupervised? Did other adults at the school know? Did they fail to report it? How could no one have known? How could this be? Reports the Washington Post. And at last report, officials at the school have very few answers. They don't know either. The one thing everyone can agree on in Prince George's County at the Judge Sylvania W. Woods Elementary School is nobody knows what the hell is going on. That's the one thing they're sure of, is their ignorance. So reason number 1,030 to get your children out of the government schools is that they could be molested on camera by a pervert, invited into the school by the stupid, foolish, ignorant, idiotic children who are running our institutions of education. There you go. That's just one more reason. As if you needed another one, please. Now, from the elementary schools of the Eastern Seaboard, we move to Mexico City, where the French press agency has shocked the world with a report that a woman with a confirmed case of the Zika virus has given birth to a healthy baby boy. That's right. No problems. Yep. She forewent the advice to get to kill the kid because the kid might be sick down there in Chiapas State, and she has given birth to a clinically healthy baby boy, 6 pounds. Yep. Yeah. There are 5 other women in good health who are pregnant in Mexico, and they're receiving specialized continuous care and are undergoing periodic ultrasonic tests so they can look at the, why do you think they're doing that, huh? That's so they can find out if the baby's sick and they can offer the obvious solution to a sick baby, kill the baby. Me, if it was me, and of course I can't be pregnant, but let's say my wife was pregnant and she had Zika, I wouldn't even want to look. I'd just say, you know what, I'm going to take my chances, and if the baby turns out sick, the one thing I will not have to regret is killing the child. In fact, I would love the child. Try to take care of the child. I realize it could be very inconvenient, but I would feel much better. I wouldn't let them near me with an ultrasound if they wanted to find out if the baby was sick and they just wanted to kill the baby. What, you think I'm not allowed to talk about being pregnant just because I'm a man? Please, I'm a human being, for crying out loud. Right? I've been through several pregnancies with my extremely attractive audio engineer. Although I admit she bore the brunt of the physical burden, I still went through it. And I know there were decisions we had to make, and we made them. And the one thing we can say is that we never killed anybody. And in the long run, I'm sure we'll be glad we didn't. All right. Now let's go. That was the personhood file, by the way. Yeah, personhood. Did you hear Ted Cruz give his impassioned speech? He made a video where he talked about how he's pro-life, 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 except for the life of the mother. Pro-life, pro-life, pro-life. So how does a 50-year-old Harvard-educated man who's achieved high office not know that it's never necessary to intentionally kill one person to save another person? Never. It's never been the case. You don't have to kill the baby to save the mother. And Ted Cruz apparently doesn't know that. And what he also doesn't understand is that that exception is big enough to drive an abortionist Mercedes through. If you think back to the mid-1960s, that's how abortion became legal in the first place. Rape, incest, life of the mother. Ah, we got to kill him, huh? That's all. We'll only kill them for that. We won't just kill all of them, for crying out loud. What do you think we are, animals? What do you think, we're psychopathic killers that we want to kill all these babies? No, just for rape, incest, life of the mother. Come on, give us an exception. That's all. And then the gullible evangelicals of the mid-1960s, they gave that to them. And by 1973, well, it just went nationwide. Why? Not because the Supreme Court was particularly any more evil than the people. It's because that's what the people wanted. Yeah, and Manny Pacquiao would point out that animals don't do that, right? All right. But let's move on from personhood and recognizing and understanding and acknowledging the personhood of every innocent person, no matter their state of dependency, is the only thing that will stop what will be looked upon 1,000 years from now as one of the greatest holocausts in human history. Nearly 1 billion innocent people slaughtered so far. 1 billion. Forget Adolf Hitler. Forget Mao Zedong. Forget all of them. They've got nothing on Margaret Sanger and the abortionists and that holocaust. Forget Adolf Hitler. Yeah, forget it. Well, I guess we don't want to forget him, but just let's keep it in perspective as to the magnitude of a diabolical crime. All right. Now, let's go to the war file. Let's see. I got a story from the Daily Beast. The Justice Department is considering whether to review the legality of any payments that the U.S. government may have made for the release of Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. You remember Bo Bergdahl. He was the private who left his post and deserted his fellow soldiers. And eventually, his actions led to a number of his fellow soldiers being wounded or killed, either searching for him or changing their plans because he was out there. Well, now, we all fought. We've all been told openly, in fact, without any shame, by Barry and his cadre, that what they actually did was they just swapped 5 prisoners out of Guantanamo for Mr. Bergdahl. But apparently, the Inspector General, the Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz, he's opened a preliminary inquiry which concerns allegations that the U.S. government paid a ransom for Bergdahl. That's right, in February 2014, the FBI sent a representative to the border region of Afghanistan and Pakistan expecting Bergdahl to be released. Well, Bergdahl didn't show up and wasn't freed until May of that year. And now the Inspector General is wondering, well, what was going on in February? Why did we expect him to be released? And he has publicly stated that he wants to know if a ransom was paid by the United States government. Allegations have been made by Representative Duncan Hunter. Hunter says something obviously happened in early 2014, and we need to determine the facts of exactly what that was. He says there's no hiding from the fact that on February 25th, 2014, the FBI notified ISAF in Afghanistan that Bergdahl would be crossing the border. The question now shifts to what led to that expectation. Well, Barry says, the U.S. doesn't pay ransoms, but the Daily Beast says that policy is at best a half-truth, which if we all know what a half-truth is, right? It's a more effective way to lie is to tell a half-truth. Not surprising coming from Barry Ho, sapper under the wire. Unbelievable. I'm guessing that there was some kind of dirty, nefarious dealing going on there that a number of people in the Obama administration will be embarrassed about. But, of course, no one will be fired or impeached or anything like that because the Republicans are just going to lay down. If they find out Barry paid the ransom himself, the leadership of the Republicans in Congress, what will their response be? Mr. Obama, who would you like to nominate to the Supreme Court? Let's get together on this. We're very upset about this embarrassing evidence that you actually flew to the Pakistani border yourself with a suitcase full of money, and we want to get past it. Who should we put on the court, Mr. Obama? Thank you, sir. May we have another? Pathetic. Meanwhile, in Syria, U.S.-backed militia groups are apparently now fighting each other. All the arms that we smuggled into there through various places, Benghazi and wherever, they're now using them on each other. Islamist rebel defenders are now fighting ISIS. They're fighting the Assad regime. They're fighting the Russians. And now they're fighting the Syrian Kurdish militia. And these were the original rebels we armed, and we also have been arming the Kurds, and now they're fighting each other. Now, according to the Telegraph in London, a cessation of hostilities was supposed to come into force last Friday, but the fighting in Syria has continued despite the fact that, who's that? Who's the guy who works for Obama in the State Department who succeeded Hillary Clinton? I always draw a blank on this guy's name. Such a vacuous, empty suit. John Kerry. So the Barry and Kerry show said, well, look, we've decided there's going to be a ceasefire. We've decided that there'll be a ceasefire take place then in a week, they said. And the Russians been bombing nonstop, and the fighting hasn't stopped. The war in Syria, according to the reporter at the Telegraph, has become a complex mess. Many American diplomats have left the administration in disgust, saying that the mess is a consequence of Obama's decision to only half-heartedly support the rebellion against Assad. And, of course, then deciding to support the Kurds half-heartedly, hoping that they would fight ISIS, which they did. But then they also started fighting everyone else because they want their own state, the Kurds. Yeah. And so it's just a disaster when idiotic, stupid, suicidal children who hate their fathers. Well, it's bad enough when they take to the streets and march with Occupy. It's bad enough when they march with Black Lives Matter. It's bad enough when they start burning down liquor stores in Baltimore. But heaven help us all when they achieve the highest office in the land and have their hands every day on the levers of power. Suckers and fools. That's what I think. The majority. I remember when I first heard a sermon preached against democracy. The pastor said that the majority are evil. And at that point, I thought to myself, well, I already realized that the majority is annoying. And I generally disagree with most of them. And they're stupid. And I realized, I think he's right. They're evil. The majority is evil, and democracy is dangerous. And here we are in an election season that is proving him more right than he could have ever known he was. Yes. I heard a sermon against democracy in my formative years, as a matter of fact. Bob Enyart, Denver Bible Church. Well, it wasn't even Denver Bible Church then. I think we were sitting around a campfire, as a matter of fact, at about 9,000 feet. Anyway. Let's move on. Proving how dangerous democracy is, Barack Obama occupies the White House, and in our war file, he refuses to hit the new headquarters of the ISIS in Libya. Yeah, the Daily Beast reports that despite the growing threat from the Islamic State in Libya, Obama has turned down a military plan, a U.S. military plan, for an assault on ISIS's regional hub there. Africa and special operations commands have pushed for more airstrikes, elite troops, especially in the city of Sirte, hometown of Muammar Gaddafi. Defense officials, in fact, We're crafting military plans for strikes, but those plans have been put on the back burner because, as one defense official says, there is little to no appetite for that in this administration. Why? I don't know. Maybe because they're going to be watching movies with Beyonce this weekend, and they just don't want to go, you know, the phone could ring. I mean, anything could happen. Could be very disruptive to the weekend. There is no stable government in Libya, the Daily Beast reports, and we all know that. Nearly 500,000 people are internally displaced. Almost 2 million people in Libya now require some kind of humanitarian aid. And last Tuesday marked the 5-year anniversary of Libya's Arab Spring, which has turned out to be quite bittersweet for most of the Libyan people. And just a reminder for those of you who may not remember, last October was the 4th anniversary of Hillary Clinton's quip regarding Muammar Gaddafi. She said, "We came, we saw, he died." That was Hillary Clinton. You all remember that? She looked like she looked like a mad scientist or something. That was an interview. I saw that. It was quite disturbing. We'll move on to other war news. Israel says that they're beginning to pick up signs in their intelligence gathering that a number of Middle East and Arab states are seeking nuclear weapons, actively seeking nuclear weapons. Or as George W. Bush would say, they're actively seeking nuclear weapons. Actively, yes. Moshe Yaalon said Sunni Arab nations are not reassured by last year's deal between Iran and Berry and some other bozos. And they're making their own preparations for nuclear weapons. Countries in the Arab world are preparing to acquire nuclear weapons, says Moshe Yaalon. They are not willing to sit quietly with Iran on the brink of a nuclear bomb. And the Israeli defense minister, Moshe Yaalon, he gave no evidence as to how he knows this. Why? Because he's not as stupid as Americans. Unlike his American counterparts, Yaalon, in America, they we can't help ourselves. We just vomit out classified information. We put it on private servers. Joe Biden has a couple of drinks. He lets it slip. But Moshe Yaalon, he keeps classified material to himself. He doesn't let it leak about their methods and sources and all that stuff just to score some political points. You think I'm making this up? All right. Well, the Joe Biden, that was a joke. Right? Half drunk Joe. Nah, okay, I made that up. But what about Hillary's emails? How about that? What about the White House's detailed description of the bin Laden assault and the methods and the sources that were exposed? You know, they got a doctor there, Shaquille Afridi. Does anybody remember this poor guy? He's in prison in Pakistan right now for helping us. He ran a fake vaccination campaign and helped us get Osama's DNA so that we could bomb his particular, so we could break into his bedroom. This guy helped us find him. And because the White House had to dance around and parade and say how great it was and describe the operation, he ends up in prison. I mean, last I heard, I mean, the guys, there's no light of day at the end of that tunnel for Shaquille Afridi. See, if he would have helped the Jews, if the Jews had killed bin Laden, Afridi would probably live it up in Tel Aviv, probably have his own apartment and be practicing medicine, more than likely. But what Shaquille Afridi didn't realize was that he was siding with the wrong guys against bin Laden, which tells you how bad the guys are that he was. Yeah, I know. And that's us now. It's very sad. Very sad. Okay, I made mention of Glenn Beck earlier. Glenn Beck is on a fast. For, let's see, who is it? Not Donald Trump. No, Beck hates Trump. He is on a fast for Ted Cruz. Yeah, he said earlier this week, apparently on his radio show, his co-host Pat Gray was having trouble dealing with why God would allow Antonin Scalia to die when the U.S. was so politically divided, and the threat in the country and the election, and it's just terrifying. And so Glenn Beck called into his own show, which he's not doing now because he's out campaigning for and doing revival meetings for Ted Cruz. And so he calls into his own show and he says, let's see here. He says, this is what God is thinking. You're welcome, America. I just woke the American people up. I took them out of the game show moment and woke them up enough to say, look how close your liberty is to being lost. And then Beck said, look, I didn't say God killed Scalia to help Cruz. And everyone who was listening to his show was like, you didn't? Okay, well, we're very sorry that we inferred that, but it sounded like that's what you said, Glenn. But then we forgot that you're on the verge of a complete mental breakdown. Here's what Beck said about the precarious nature of liberty in America. After he said that God allowed Scalia to die so that he could wake the American people up, he said the Constitution is hanging by a thread. If you replace one guy, and now you have 5-4 decisions on the Supreme Court going the other direction, and just with this one guy, you've lost your liberty, said Glenn Beck. And now he's fasting, and he'll probably end up in a mental hospital. But this does bring up a very important point. Ever since the pro-life movement in America decided to pursue the tactic of changing the Supreme Court in order to end abortion, ever since that day, we, that's people who are against the killing of babies, the killing of unborn people, we in the pro-life movement have been educating our politicians that the Supreme Court is indeed supreme. We have taught them judicial supremacy. So that now an entire generation of politicians for 30 years, even politicians who consider themselves conservative, a whole generation now believe that the Supreme Court must be the ultimate authority because our whole strategy to stop the killing of innocent people has been to change the Supreme Court. It's yet another unintended consequence of the moronic, idiotic, stupid cowards who in the early 1980s abandoned the argument that the unborn child is a person and has a right to life. They abandoned that argument and said, what we've got to do is, well, we've got to change the Supreme Court. That's it. We need to elect Republicans, see, and then we'll change the court, you see, and then we'll they'll overturn Roe v. Wade, you see. And we can, we're sending out a fundraiser right now, as a matter of fact. Fundraising letters are going out right now. And so in an effort to raise money, and I don't know what else their motivation was. Primarily, I think it was cowardice. Cowardice on the part of the pro-life movement because they just weren't willing to stand up and defend the innocent. But now they've trained people like Glenn Beck and the lawyer from Texas I never heard of, the Harvard guy, Ted Cruz, to think that the Supreme Court is indeed supreme. When in fact, at least according to the Constitution, it's supposed to be a co-equal branch of government. We're supposed to have some means. If the Supreme Court goes rogue and let's say they do something just inexplicable, something inconceivable, like let's say legalizing the murder of innocent people. Let's just say the Supreme Court did. They went rogue. Well, there should be some type of check and balance against them. But there isn't anymore because an entire generation has been brainwashed to believe that the Supreme Court is the supreme being, I guess. Anyways, Scalia's last opinion, by the way, he made statements against judicial activism in the Obergefell decision, an opinion that homosexual marriage should be legal throughout the country, which is how it should be presented. It's just an opinion. This is the opinion of 9 lawyers in robes is all. But no, they say that now it's legal just because they had this opinion. Breitbart reports that Scalia's major contention with the court's decision had little to do with homosexual marriage or morality and everything to do with democracy and the rule of law. He said, it's not of special importance to me what the law says about marriage, but it is of overwhelming importance who it is that rules me. So you get that? Scalia had no moral opposition to homosexual marriage. He just said, don't let the judges do it. If you want to make homosexual marriage legal, you need to get your congressmen, get the legislators to pass the law, and then everything will be fine. Anyway, Scalia now explaining himself to God, or at least in the waiting room, waiting to explain himself. And we'll move on. I don't want to beat up on Scalia. I feel sad for his family that he died and all that. I'm sure it's been very traumatic for them. But Justice Scalia was the best we could produce as a conservative for the past 40 years, and he had no moral guidance. In fact, according to former Focus on the Family staff attorney James Odom, Scalia was at Pepperdine University, and during a Q&A session, he was asked about morality and strictly following the law. A student asked Scalia that if he had been a judge in socialist Germany in the 1930s and 40s and had followed his own moral relativistic advice, how would he have fared? How would he have fared? Scalia answered, well, I guess I would have been prosecuted at Nuremberg. Well, there you go. And this is the best we can do as a conservative after 40 years. Maybe it's time for another strategy, for crying out loud. All right, now we have another woman slashed in the New York subways. Young woman slashed across the face, the latest in the slashing, in the orgy of slashing going on in New York. Paula De Los Santos, 20 years old. The suspect shoved her to the ground. Well, he slashed her face, shoved her to the ground, kicked her in the face, and then stole her stuff and took off. She received 26 stitches. The guy got her ID card, her bank cards, and $20 in cash and her keys. And he sliced her face open with a box cutter. She warned her Facebook friends. She said, be careful walking alone in the evening, especially with your belongings out. So how free of a country do we live in when young women are afraid to sit on the subway with their iPhone in public view because they might be slashed and robbed? Is this a free country? I don't think it'll ever be a free country again for Paula De Los Santos. I don't think she'll ever feel free again. And I hold the lawyers who are running this country, the proctocracy, I hold them accountable. And I hold the ministers and the preachers in this country who have failed to stand up against the lawyers and speak the truth about justice. And the fact that if a guy slashes a woman's face, he should be executed so that something like this never happens again. And that a woman like Paula De Los Santos should feel free to ride on the subway and text her friends and talk on her phone, have her purse out, have her keys out. She should be able to have a wad of cash sitting next to her and have no fear. But we've all been miseducated. What else? Italy. Italy has seen the fewest births ever. Ever. Yes. Let's see here. Fewer babies were born in Italy in 2015. Than in any year since the country was founded in the modern era 150 years ago. The number of deaths jumped more than 9% on top of all that. Talk about depression. The highest mortality rate since World War II in Italy, and there's not even a war. A general sense of insecurity is making people wait longer to have fewer children. Well, all right. You know, that's kind of depressing, but hey, it is what it is. Here at the McBurney compound, we're happy almost all the time. And our children are growing up, experiencing a childhood of virtually unrestrained bliss. And so we're happy. And it's because we are followers of Jesus Christ. And that's the show. Should the Lord tarry, we'll be back next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, TheologyOnline.com, of course at AmericanRightToLife.com, and as always, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, I want to wish all of you the best, and may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.